Welcome to the Snark Podcast. Today, Shoftim, Chapter 15. And it's not only because of Hanukkah that fire is on my mind, but it is because of the chapter that we're about to read, where Shimshon definitely does start the fire. First, a couple of words maybe about the geography behind this story. Shimshon is from Bet Shemesh, Bein Tzora uVein Eshta'ol. It seems like his name is from Bet Shemesh. And Tzora, if you drive to Bet Shemesh from, I don't know, from the Jerusalem Tel Aviv High Road along Route 38, you pass Kibbutz Eshta'ol, and then you actually pass Nachal Sorek, which we'll talk about next class. And then you see Bet Shemesh on your left, and soon you see Kibbutz Tzora. These are the bits of Israel whereby you have, if you want, the coastal plain, and Bet Shemesh brings us into the foothills of Jerusalem until you get to the high hills of Jerusalem, which are about 700 to 800 meters above sea level. Why is this relevant? Because this is the natural border between the coastal plain and the hills. In the time in which Shimshon is living, the Philistines control the coastal plain. It's meant to be the tribal territory of Dan, the tribe of Dan. And that's why in the coastal plain, you have actually the Dan Bus Company. And it's frequently referred to, the area around Tel Aviv, as Gush Dan, because it is the tribe of Dan. However, because of the Philistines, the tribe of Dan found it very, very difficult to take hold of their tribal territory. And as we will see in this story, in subsequent chapters, and even in the story of the capture of the Aron, which we're going to read in Shmuel Aleph, Perek, Hey and Vav, the borderland between the Jews and the Philistines is right there along Route 38. Everything westwards is Philistine territory. And the hills, the foothills, become the natural border. This, by the way, is all the way up till the time of David and Goliath, all those stories. It's the foothold, the foothills, which become the border between the Philistines on the plain and the Jews who occupy the hills. And that's the background to our story. Shimshon, as we heard, has his wife has been given to another man. He didn't fulfill, apparently in time, his wedding agreements, or simply they were so outraged. And it says it is Ketzir Chitim, it's the summer or the spring when they're going to reap all the crops. Shimshon comes to his wife and her father says to him, "We said that you hated her and we gave her to somebody else. If you want, you can have her younger sister." Shimshon is furious, and he says, "Niketi apam miplishtim ki oseh ani imam ra'ah." I'm going to have it with the plishtim. And what he does is he captures 300 foxes. This, by the way, is going to remind us possibly of the 300 soldiers of Gidon, whereas Gidon managed to defeat the enemy with 300 soldiers. Here, he captures 300 foxes. You sort of wonder how he did that and kept them and fed them. And then he ties the torches of fire between their tails so that each two of them have one torch between them and they're pushing this way and that way. He sets the torches on fire. And what the result of all of this is that all the fields around in the coastal plain, basically they run rampage throughout the whole area and set all of the wheat harvest on fire. This is very, very similar to what Hamas tried to do from Gaza when they used to send over balloons with fire bombs on them to try and set on fire all the fields in the area around Gaza. This time it is Shimshon attacking Gaza with this methodology. One of the big questions here that we have, remember the original Nevuah with that Malach, that Shimshon is meant to be saving the Israelites from the Philistines. when's he going to start doing this? And this is really telling in the next scene as well, which takes place after this big guerrilla action that he's done with the fire. He goes and hides in a city cella, in a cave, as one does, in a place called Etam. Etam is behind Efrat of today. He goes into Eretz Yehuda, and interestingly enough, what happens is the Plishtim come and they encamp against Yehuda in a place called Lehi. Lehi is going to be significant because it's going to come back in the story. How many Philistines we'll see from the end of the story? It sounds like only 1,000. And they basically turn round to the Yehuda and give them their terms. We're not interested in attacking you, Yehuda, but you've got to bring us Shimshon. And therefore, Yehuda send 3,000 soldiers to Etam and say, listen, we've got to give you into the Philistines or else we've got war with the Philistines. And he says, look, just don't kill me. And when eventually they hand him over, they tie him up with, and this is such an interesting theme once again, they tie him up with new ropes, the ropes that, you know, will keep him completely tied up. But what happens with him, again, Vatitzlach alav ruach Hashem, whenever he is angry or when he is agitated, suddenly we feel this ruach Hashem, and it tells us that these ropes are like pishtim asher baru ba'esh, you're seeing a theme, like flax which are burnt by fire, they simply melt. And then he takes a lechi, we said the word lechi, right? They camp in lechi. He takes the jawbone of a chamor and he uses it as a weapon to kill 1,000 men. And he even says a little poem. The poetry of the Shimshon stories are quite exceptional. Belechi chamor 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 atayim, belechi chamor hikiti elef ish. With the jawbone of a chamor, I have made piles out of the Philistines. I've killed 1,000 people. This is the story. What should have happened, or what could have happened at this point? If 3,000 soldiers had come in order to capture Shimshon, what he should have turned around to them and said is, now's the time to revolt. Now is the time to stage the rebellion. We just remembered the number 300. If Gideon managed to defeat the enemy with 300 soldiers, Shimshon should certainly be able to defeat the enemy with 3,000 soldiers. But Shimshon, it doesn't even cross his mind. The irony of Shimshon is he is a man who thinks about himself. He thinks about his own vendettas. And he is somehow unable to live up to this reputation or this legacy, this yi'ud that he has been given by God. In the very last scene, and notice, until now he's never turned to God, but at a certain point here, he, after he's killed these 1,000 people, he gets any long-lasting victory. And this is the big dilemma, this is the big question which hovers over the story of Shimshon. Tomorrow we'll see Shimshon's end, and hopefully we'll offer some directions for trying to put all of this all together. See you then. Happy Hanukkah.